This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here with Thomas Bonvasusto. We're living well today.
We're living well. That's right, Drew. It's a beautiful day.
And then, you know, in case somebody doesn't know what that means, is Bonvasusto means?
Lived well.
Lived well. Well, mm-hmm. We're living well.
Yes, we're living.
Not, we didn't live well. That's past tense.
That's past tense. So that's how you get the name, right? It's something your ancestors did. And you get named after them.
And you are still living well.
I am still living well.
Okay. Anyway, we're here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're on an open show tonight.
Yeah.
So we're answering your questions. You're the guest. You get to determine what you want us to talk about tonight. So you get to call and say, this is what I want you to talk about. Can you help me? Can you help me with estate planning? Can you help me with elder care? You know, I got issues with my parents. Say, can you help me with my will? Can you help me with my IRA, with my 401k? What's going on with the stock market? Mm-hmm. Hey, what about these insurance policies? What should I do here? What should I do there? You name it. If it's dealing with your personal finances, we'll address it for you. And if you want to call in, now would be a great time to do that. 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question, because you get to be the guest tonight, you get to lead the show, you get to determine what we're going to talk about tonight.
Yep. Yeah, it's been it's obviously been an exciting couple of weeks here for folks. And you know, we've been, I'm amazed how often we don't get phone calls from clients, you know, during this kind of a season in the markets. You know, people call me up and go, oh, you must be really busy with phone calls. And like, my clients generally don't call. You know, they've got other things. They're letting us take care of it.
They know that, you know, that's what we do. You know, we're here to manage the portfolios. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's an interesting point, Tom, is that when I was a stockbroker back in the 1980s, if this was a crash of 1987, I could not do anything for my client's portfolio until I got them on the phone and said, hey, I think this is going to be really serious, or hey, this is really serious. We need to do this or we need to do that. And, you know, you had to get their approval every time you made trades. So if you had 100 clients, you had to get on the phone and call 100 clients.
Right.
Now that we're fee-only fiduciary registered investment advisors, we work on a totally different standard, and we can work on discretion for our clients. They tell us what they want us to try to accomplish. They tell us the risk volatility they want us to deal with, and we go out and we try to accomplish that on a day-to-day minute-by-minute basis. Now, you know, we're not trading the account on a day-to-day, minute-to-minute basis, but, you know, back in July, we felt that there were some issues, and we took some positions off the table. I think we raised, another 15? We were already underweight, but we took another 15%, something like that, 10% off the table. We could do that. We can just do that. It doesn't require us to get on the phone and call every one of our clients and ask them if we can do that or not. So we've got people who are calling in, and we'll find out what they want to ask.
Well, and it's interesting, Drew. I think this is a great opportunity to have that conversation with an advisor, you know, and to reassess your situations. If people are getting nervous and anxious during this time, you know, then they have to look at their portfolios. But the people need to be careful not to make emotional moves during this time in the market.
Well, that's what you know, if you do and you lock in those losses, if you're right and the market keeps going down a lot further, and then you're willing to buy in when it gets down a lot further, it can work out to be a great strategy. But if you make that emotional decision and you get out, and before you ever buy again, it takes off again, all you did was lock those losses in. So you have to be very careful about, you know, things like that and so forth. So anyway, we're on an open show, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask your question, we have a couple people online. I have Braz in Centerville. Braz, how can we help you?
It's Buzz, but that's okay.
She wrote Braz, and I'm just saying, Buzz?
Her typing skills are a little bit leave to be
desired.
Yeah,
well, you know, don't worry. We will definitely tease Anita before the end of this show, but go ahead.
There you go. The reason I called, I do listen to your show quite often, and I enjoy it when I drive from Baltimore all the way to Centerville.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I'm calling is that my wife and I will have six figures coming in as cash back from some tax issues in my company. And she has great concern about putting it in back into a savings account at this time. It seems like a lot of people are buying silver right now. Their talk is if there's going to be some kind of crash in the next 3 to 4 months. Every time you turn around, you hear about why is somebody investing so much in silver.
Well, you know, first off, when you think about buying a precious metal, you got to think about why are you buying a precious metal? Are you buying it because you think the end of the world is coming? That's one thing. Or are you buying it because you think that the supply and demand of the commodity is out of whack? And that it's about ready to turn and go higher, and you're going to make money on it. So you have to determine what is it you're thinking of. And personally, I'm not into the people who think, you know, that the end of the world is coming, and I'm going to buy silver and gold, and I'm going to be a prepper and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I think those kind of things are, you know, that I can't say there's no chance they're going to happen, but the probability of something that like that happening is 1% at the best. And, you know, and I always think if you, let's say the end of the world did come and governments were gone and I've got silver coins, mm-hmm. what am I going to do? What am I going to do with them? Right. Who am I going to trade them with? You have to have a big dog and a big gun, too.
I was going to say you need a gun.
You need a gun and a big dog.
And a garden.
And a garden so that, you know, when people come to take your silver away from you, you can stop them. But, you know, you're not going to go down to the store and rake some silver off into somebody's hands and get anything out of it. So
right.
You strictly buy precious metals when you feel that there's a supply and demand issue.
Mm-hmm.
And in this issue, I think silver is actually an interesting play. Silver traded for $49 an ounce 3 years ago. Today, it's trading at $14 an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 75 or 73% decline from its all-time high. I'm not saying silver's going higher right away, but it's definitely the price has dropped into a place that it's interesting, not as a prepper type thing, but more just from a supply and demand issue. But I would never put more than 2, 3% into silver if I were you, Buzz. And I would buy it as an ETF or something like that because you're really not doing it to be a prepper. You just want to be able to get in and get out. All right? I got to really run and take my break because they're mad at me right now. All right, Buzz? You take care. Thank you. Go ahead. Take it away, traffic.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
I don't know, Tom, but Anita really jazzes us up when we get on.
Oh, yeah. It's exciting. It's always exciting.
Oh, yeah. You know, you can hear the enthusiasm.
Yep.
Anyway. Sam and Glen Burnie, how can we help you?
How you guys doing?
Good, good, very good. What's
great,
up?
Great, Sam.
I'm selling my mother's house. I'm a retired teacher with a part-time business. What would you recommend me to do to reduce my tax liability?
You're selling your mom's house, right?
Correct.
And mom's lived in it all her life, right?
Correct. She passed about 8 years ago.
8 years ago?
Yeah.
What was the house worth 8 years ago when she passed?
I would imagine 230, 240.
And do you live in the house now?
No, I do not.
Okay. Is anybody?
No, I had a renter in there, but she moved out a month ago.
Okay. When you rent it, do you treat it on your tax return as a rental property?
Yes.
Okay. So it was 230 or so, right?
Correct.
And what's it worth now?
The entire property is listed at 250.
$250, so not much of an appreciation. So the only thing you're going to pay taxes on, Sam, is the recapture of depreciation on the sale of the house. Okay?
Okay.
So the recapture of depreciation would be, let's think, $127, so you were taking about $10,000 is, did I calculate that? $10,000 a year, right? $10,000.
$8,500
a year in depreciation. You rented it for what? 5 years? 7 years?
7 years.
7 years, $8,500. That's $54,000 of depreciation you're going to have to recapture. That's where your taxable liability is going to come from. Okay? There's two ways to deal with that. One, you can move into the house and use it as your personal residence for a while. That could help you a little, not a lot, but that's a little. The best thing to do would be to buy another rental property in another area and defer the gain from that rental home into another rental home that you'd really like to own. So, for example, let's say you'd like to own a place at the ocean. So you take the money in the sale of this house, and you do a 1031 exchange, and you buy a place at the ocean, and you rent that out, and all the gain is deferred on the movement from the one property to the other.
Okay.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, but at this age of my life, I'm too old to be a landlord. I don't have to pay.
Well, one of the beauties of a rental home, if you want one down there, let's just say Ocean City is something you want, okay? You can go into a condo where they'll do all of it for you, all right? And so you're not going to make a lot of money on it, but you'll at least defer the taxes, and you'll have a beautiful little place to retreat to if you want. Now, if you don't want that, it's not something you've ever cared about in retirement, then you just sell it and pay the taxes on it. It's the recapture of depreciation is taxed at a rate of 25%, so expect to owe taxes of about $10,000 on the sale. You walk away with $230 net after fees, after capital gains, and you call it a day.
I figure I can do that.
All right, man.
I appreciate
good
it.
Good question. Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to Frank in Baltimore, but we're on an open show tonight. You're the guest. You get to call in and ask your questions, 410-922-6680. I've got lines open, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question, then we're going to Frank in Baltimore. Frank, are
Hi,
you there?
Drew.
How you doing?
Fine. With respect to Social Security, I have two related questions. Could you explain the difference between file and suspend and the restricted application? And secondly, are there ever any times when either of those techniques are useful to a single person? I know for a married couple involving the spousal benefit, there are any number of strategies, but is it ever useful for a single person to file and suspend or use a restricted application?
Well, Tom, you're going to have to figure out, or I'll figure out, what is a restricted application? I haven't heard that term what do you mean by a restricted application?
It's something like file and suspend, but it's different. And I think, you know, when Jack Friel has been on the show,
right?
I think he has addressed that. It's kind of a technical point. So unless you're really focused on it, you know, it kind of...
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about. It's just I've never heard it referred to as restricted application. So restricted application is where I'm married, right? My wife has her own benefits. I have my own benefits.
Right.
But I file and suspend, and then she goes in, and instead of collecting her own benefits, she collects spousal benefits.
Right.
So she restricts her own benefits so she can collect spousal benefits. So I just never heard it referred to as a restricted application. So I apologize for that. But let's look at it. So first off, file and suspend is really where you're going in and you're saying, I want to retire but not collect benefits. You can only do that at your full retirement age.
So okay.
It's very important to always know what your full retirement age is. Mine is 66 and 8 months.
Uh-huh.
Tommaso down here is a young man. He's at 67. But a lot of people who haven't retired yet in Social Security, their full retirement age is going to be 66 years of age.
Right.
Okay, so is there a benefit for a single person to file and suspend? And the answer is absolutely yes. And let me explain why, okay? The reason is that as I go in at my full retirement age at age 66 and I file and suspend, every year I wait, my benefit grows by 8%. So let's say my benefit is $2,000. At the end of the year, I'm at $2,160. And on it goes, compounding 8% a year until I hit age 70.
Right.
I hit age 70. I now have two choices. Choice number one is to take my compounded benefit, since I turned 66 and filed and suspended, at the compounded rate that it's grown to. And let's say that's $2,600 a month. I can now take the $2,600 a month for the rest of my life. Or my second option is I can take a lump sum for every month I deferred my Social Security going back to when I was 66. So if I, as a single person, want to create a lump sum of cash, I could get a big lump sum of cash right there by getting 4 years of Social Security benefit, bam, in 1 year at age 70. So that's why a single person might consider to do it, to leave that option open for a lump sum.
If you take the lump sum at 70, do you get any? You get a monthly benefit thereafter, but is it like what you would have?
You would gotten in it at the same rate at 66, but with the cost of living increases that would have happened if you took it at 66. So that's the difference. You're going to get the lump sum and your benefit as what it would have been at 66, or you get no lump sum and the new benefit that's compounded at age 70.
I got you. So if you don't file and suspend, then you go in there at 70.
You just get, your only choice is to get the larger monthly money.
Got it.
That's why you would file and suspend as a single. Now, as a single person, you cannot do a restricted application if you've never been married. You have to be married or divorced and have been married to somebody for more than 10 years and not remarried by 62. You could take your spousal benefits then. So if you're single because you've been divorced and you were married for more than 10 years and you didn't remarry before age 62, or let's put it this way, you were not remarried at age 62, then you could go in and file for spousal benefits and restrict and take the spousal benefits, let your own benefits grow until age 70.
Got it.
That's why you would do that. All right?
All righty. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And I got to take another pause for traffic, and I'm almost on time. You got to give me credit for that, Anita. And I'm going to be right back with an open show. It'll be a fair hold, Dave and Ben, so please hold on with us. And if you want to call in 410-922-6680, take it away, traffic.
Back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, Tommaso, we're on an open show. We've got the lines full, so we're going right to them and see if we can answer their questions. Dave in Baltimore, are you there?
Due to the bad market, I was wondering, I have a thrift account where I have 80% in the common stock. Do you suggest due to this market that I get out of it?
No, that's hard to say, not knowing how your...
We're in G.
Yeah,
you know, the market.
Not knowing how your total portfolio is and so forth.
It's 80-20. 20.
Yeah, but I mean...
20 in G.
But what do you have otherwise? Do you have a pension? Do you need this money? Do you know what are your goals and objectives with this money and so forth? Are you willing to handle the volatility? Those are all the kind of questions you have to ask yourself, Dave, when you make that kind of decision, not trying to predict absolutely where the market's going to go, but try to decide, why do I have my money in 80-20, and where am I headed?
I have it in the common stock. So we can
if it went down, let's say it went down 50%, what would that do to your lifestyle?
Not much.
So because you're just letting the money. So what I would suggest is if you get a little rally, take 10 or 20% off the table so that you're not worried about it, and then just let the rest ride.
Or else leave it there.
You're already down 15%. But, I think this is going to be an ugly one for a little while. I think it's going to cause some gyrations. But you're never going to be able to predict the bottom. And you have to determine why you're doing what you're doing.
Well, it's just a account, not the...
Yeah.
By the way, I haven't taken a distribution. You said S1. I became 70 and a half in April of this year.
You have until April 1st of next year to take your first distribution, but I would do it before the end of this year, so you don't have to take two next year.
Before the end of this year?
Before the end of this year, so you don't have to take two next year. And I'm assuming you're not working for the government anymore.
No, I'm not working.
Yeah. So you definitely have to take it, you know, before April 1st for your first one, but I would also suggest you take it before the end of this year so you don't get stuck with taking two next year. I got to run, Dave.
Got to take one this year and another one next year.
You're going to have to take one every year from now on.
Yep.
Until you're no longer with us.
Yeah, but if I take it this year, the next one has to be before April 1st? Or?
No. It has to be next year, sometime in 2016.
Yeah. You have to take it by December 31st next year. Got to run, Dave. Good question. Ben in Glen Burnie, how can we help you?
Good evening, gentlemen. Hey, I have a similar question to the previous caller about the house he inherited.
Uh-huh.
My wife and I inherited her parents' house in 2008.
Right.
And we've never rented it.
Okay.
We've maintained it and kept it up, and we do want to sell it.
Anybody live there?
No.
Okay.
What I want to know, how do I assess the value from 2008?
So what happened is when you inherited the property from somebody who deceased, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when somebody passed away, when you inherit the property, your cost basis in that property is the value of the property at time of passing. And so if you sell that house for more than what it was worth at the time that person passed and you inherited it, then you have a capital gain. If it's less, then you have no loss because it's never been used as a business property. You had to have rented it in order to show a tax loss on the property.
Okay.
I got how do you
back in 2008, it was before the real estate bubble burst.
Yeah, it could have been worth as much or more. So how do you figure it out? There's two ways. Number one, you have to go back to the estate filing. Was there an estate probate done? And what did they tell the probate court the house was worth? And that, you know, hopefully they didn't tell them it was worth a little bit of money. Hopefully they told them it was worth fully what it was worth. So that's one thing, and that's the primary thing to do. If there was no probate court or probate administration set up and you just inherited it through like a life estate deed or something.
That's how we
did. Yeah, so then nobody would have recorded what the value was. You have to go back, and I would go look up in the real property database what were houses in that area selling for when your parent or whoever passed away.
Oh, okay.
That's, we do it all the time. You go into real property data, do a Google search, Maryland real property data search.
Yep, I'm familiar with it.
And go in there and search the street, see what houses were selling for around that time. Use that number. The IRS is very unlikely to question you on it as long as the number is reasonable.
Right.
All right?
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, take care. Good question. We're going to Francis in Glen Burnie. Francis, how can we help you?
Do you answer questions about Medicare?
We can try, and if we don't know the answer, we'll make it up for you, Francis. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
How long do you have to pay Medicare? I'm retired.
Here's the bad news, Francis. You could be 115, and if you're still working in an earned income job, they're going to still take Medicare tax out of your paycheck. Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
See, I didn't even make that one up.
Oh, well, good.
I gave you the true answer on that one. But it's unfortunate, you know, even though you're Medicare and even though you're approved for Medicare and even though you've paid for 50 years or so, they're going to just keep taking it.
And I'm paying premiums now.
Yeah, I know. Yep. And they're just going to keep going to keep taking it because the money that you make in an earned income, the Medicare tax they take is for Medicare A. And what you're paying out of your Social Security check is Medicare B, and that's why they keep taking it. And it's unfortunate, but that's the way it works.
Okay, thank you.
And I wish they had a better answer for you.
Yeah.
a better Medicare system or something. We're going an open show tonight. So if you want to call in and ask questions, 410-922-6680. We've got a lot of diverse questions tonight. Very, very good. Mary on the Eastern Shore, how can we help you? Mary.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
I have a, I guess I'm 67. My husband's 71. About 4 years ago, we had a will done, made. And in the will was just a regular kind of will. What I wanted to do was get something, because our house is paid for, I wanted to get something that the kids, our two sons put on the house. So if we had to go to nursing home, the nursing home wouldn't get the house.
Well, I'm not necessarily sure that that would be a great strategy. So what I would suggest you do is you need to do a much more thorough analysis of your finances. See, if you put the children's names on the house and then you guys go to, one of you go to a nursing home, let's say one's passed away and the other one goes to a nursing home, and the boys come in and sell the house, they're going to pay a capital gains tax on the sale of that house, which may not be a lot of fun. And depending on how you put the children's names on the house and depending on what kind of control the children take over the house, they could also lose the step-up in cost basis that I was just talking about with the other owner. The other caller on, you know, a house. So you got to be real careful putting children's names on the house. And what I would suggest is looking at a more comprehensive long-term care plan as to, well, how much assets do we have? And what real things can we do to protect from a long-term care risk? And do I have assets? Do I have income? Are there places that we could move to minimize the risk of us ever going into a long-term care facility? Do you and your husband have a reasonable amount of assets, or do you have a very tiny amount of assets?
I've got an IRA of about $50,000, and that's it. We're living off Social Security, and our house is paid for.
Okay. So then under those circumstances, what I would suggest is that if either of you two have any medical conditions that start to appear that seems as if it could require a long-term care stay somewhere in the distant future, take about $1,000 and spend it on a good Medicare attorney or Medicaid attorney. They're called elder care attorneys, like Kevin Bress, who we've had on this show. And hire him, and he will work, and he will protect a large amount of those assets for your children without you messing up the income tax consequences and putting the kids' names on the house with you. You're in the perfect situation that a guy like Kevin Bress can help you tremendously. And there are a lot of elder care attorneys, not just Kevin in Maryland and Baltimore, but down there on the Eastern Shore, there are a lot of good attorneys also. All right?
Okay, so what's the name of the type of attorney I want to go to?
Elder care attorney. But don't do it unless you have a medical situation starting to arise. Don't wait until it gets real bad, just when it seems like it's going to possibly head that way, okay?
Okay, thank you for your help.
All right, bye. We got to take that traffic break. See ya. Traffic.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And this is Money, Riches, and Wealth here with Drew Tignanelli and Tommaso Bambasuto.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And we're on an open show. And if you want to call in, we still have time for at least one or two more callers.
Yep.
410-922-6680 is the way to call in. 410-922-6680. And we will answer your question. I do have one caller online. It is our good friend, Michael. Michael, how are you?
Thank God. How are you, Drew?
I'm doing wonderful. What's up?
First of all, as a preface to what I want to speak with you about, Michael Savage is going to speak tonight about the Shemitah year, which I brought up a week or two ago with Harry Dent's representative. You remember that call?
Yes, absolutely. I know a lot of people that are talking about the Shemitah right now, and the more this market goes, the more they talk about it.
Right. So there are people that are expecting a crash somewhere around September 13th, and that's why the skittishness that people have now with their investments, is only going to increase as we get closer to that time. But what I wanted to ask you first before I get to the larger question is when we have the Chinese manipulating their monetary system as far as the yuan is concerned, and America doing the same with the quantitative easing that they've been doing. And then thirdly, you have Yellen, who we don't know if when or if she's going to raise the interest rates. So you got all that uncertainty there because of the manipulation of the currencies, and you have the stock market that's been propped up all this time because the inflation rate has been held down artificially by the Fed. So if there is reason to be skittish about those things alone, what's going to happen, and especially when you add the Shemitah year to it, there's even double reason for uncertainty.
Well,
however,
let me...
when it comes to the war that people are also concerned about, if Israel would attack Iran, which looks like it may happen, there are those who are worried about what that would do to their stocks as well. And we're assured by one of our greatest sages that that war will not affect Israel. And the reason is because you have in Psalm 2 that that God laughs at those who think that they're going to destroy the Jewish people, that they're making...
That's absolutely true. So slow down now, and we're going to have a conversation from this point, all right? So, you know, I love it when people say that China, just because they devalued the yuan the other day, that that was manipulating, because I don't agree with that. So, for example, over the last 2 years, the euro collapsed by, 30%?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now over the last week, it's up 10%. But nobody ever said that the euro was being manipulated during that period of time. So people who allow their currency to trade freely, and it moves 1-3% over a period of a few days or a few weeks, nobody calls them manipulators. But China looks at their situation and says, you know, there are outflows in our country going, and the yuan is moving on the lower side of our spread. You know, we're going to have to break this unless we want to just pump out a lot of reserves in order to defend it. So they did. And it's very logical. They're trying to become part of the special drawing rights in the IMF. And if they're going to do that, they're going to have to let their currency float freely, and they want to try to do it slowly. So, you know, I don't think China is manipulating. But I do agree with you wholeheartedly. Central banks around the world are manipulating, and all assets around the world are mispriced because of the manipulation. And it's very difficult to figure out where you're getting value. You're not getting it in the bond market, and the stock market, you know, is proving that the values there are sketchy at best.
But what about if Yellen raises the interest rate, and the whole stock market has only been doing gangbusters before the last several weeks?
Look, even if Yellen raised interest rates by 0.25%, let's just use that number, 0.25%, I don't think it makes a difference whatsoever. I mean, the market's been anticipating 0.25% interest rate move for at least six months to 3 years. And, you know, it would be a non-event if she did it. England's at 0.5%. They've been at 0.5% for some time, and certainly hasn't devastated their economy in any way, shape, or form. So,
well, it's a non-event from it needs to happen, and it should happen, but it can be an emotional or a reactionary event.
Yeah.
Right. You know,
no,
so.
I understand. And yeah. and that's the issue. But I have to get one more caller in, Michael. You got one closing word?
Yeah. It's about that war one more time. The first fear that people had was in the Gulf War, when Saddam Hussein said he was going to destroy Israel too. And we saw what happened to him. All the trouble he made there to start World War III never came to happen. So we can say the same thing about the Iranians. We don't have to worry, because God is the guardian of Israel, and he never slumbers or sleeps. So,
look, Michael, you're preaching to the choir here. There's nothing more convincing that there is a God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, when you look at the Jewish people and the history of those people and what God has promised them and what he's delivered over these 5,000 years. So I'm with you there, my friend.
Eternal people, Drew.
Amen. Mm-hmm. Amen. And I bless the Israelites, because those who bless Israel, God will bless. And I look forward to that. Sandy in Pasadena.
Hello, how are you?
Great, and you?
I'm just fine. I'd like you to go back to what you were discussing earlier about a house, and we have a house and property in our daughter's name. We're both in our, my husband and I are both in our 70s.
Does she live there?
No, she lives out of state.
Okay. Why do you put it in her name?
I've had it in her name for probably 20 years, just because she's, the only reason I did it to start with, she's an only child, and, you know, I just wanted it to be safe if anything happened to the two of us.
Well, but she can get that through an inheritance, and she's going to have no income tax liability under that scenario than if you leave it in, you know, because you and your husband can sell that house tomorrow for free.
True.
She cannot. If you sell that house tomorrow, she's going to have to pay all the capital gains tax that have happened over the last 20 years.
Wait a minute. If we sell the house, she would still have to pay the capital gains tax?
Yeah, because you just told me the house is in her name, not in your name.
Oh, it's in all three of our names.
Oh, it's in all three of your names, and she'll have to pay taxes. She'll have to pay taxes on one-third of the sale of the house.
Okay.
I would, if you decide to sell that house, I'd take her name off of it before you sell it.
Okay.
All right? I'm running out of time.
In that case, then we would have to make sure that we have an up-to-date will and go directly to her.
Absolutely. Or you could put a life estate deed on it. Talk to a good real estate attorney about putting a life estate deed on it. I would suggest Jeff Higdon in Towson, great real estate attorney. Just tell him Drew sent you and tell him you want to get a life estate deed on the house for your daughter so it absolutely goes to her. Okay?
All right. So this is Higdon.
Higdon, H-I-G-D-O-N. Jeffrey Higdon.
Okay.
All right?
You
take care, Sandy.
Much.
Goodbye. And this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless. And God bless Israel.
There you go.